Just a tad late on Free Radio Santa Cruz at 101.1 FM and freakradio.org. It's, yes, your favorite, the number one show on Free Radio Santa Cruz, Bathrobe Spears Broadsides with your favorite host, Robert Norris. That, of course, is me. Stay tuned for the next 2 hours. We're expecting an in-studio guest, John Williams, UCSC student, describing the region's latest free speech hanky-pankies, as well as a caller from St. Louis. I believe he calls himself Rabble Rouser, but we'll have to find out just what moniker he's using these days when he calls in. Plus, updates from the Tuesday Cop Watch, the Wednesday Drum Circle, and from you, if you call in at 427-3772. Free Radio Santa Cruz, you can also reach the folks, including me, at 469-3119, another call-in number. And if you want to catch me off air, it's 423-HUFF. But don't be confused. The basic number, 427-3772. Stay tuned. And now a brief selection from that little-known but much-beloved musical, Young Frankenstein. Or is it Frankenstein?
To the castle.
A wee strop fair de schlagen wagen suchen fruchen.
What's that?
A hayride! Roll, roll, roll in the hay. Roll, roll your troubles away. When life is awful, just jump on a stropple and roll, roll in the hay.
Roll, roll, roll in the hay. Roll, roll, do it all day. When spirits are sagging, just jump in a wagon and roll, roll in the hay.
I'm very high-spirited, Doctor. I hope you won't hold it against me.
Oh, I'll try not to.
Hitch those horses up, a gay ride, we'll have lots of fun. Nothing's better than a hay ride underneath the sun.
Roll, roll, roll in the hay.
Sometimes love finds a way. You might steal a kiss from an unwitting miss who's not too resistant to play. So let's roll, roll, roll. Have you thought of any bays you could use me?
Two, and I'm working on a third.
Oh, good. Does that mean I'm hired?
Well, a large part of me is pointing in that direction.
Roll, roll in the hay.
We'll go up the path, then down the hill. Back up the path, then down the hill. We'll go up and down and up and down and up and down and up and down.
Pitch those horses up for a gay.
Your lady, your lady.
Rollin' it,
rollin' it. Come take a hayride and take your breath away. Ride, rollin' it, rollin' the hay. Your lady, 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 your lady. Your lady, 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 lady. Your lady, your lady, your lady, your lady, your lady.
What's that?
Werewolves.
Werewolves?
They're wolves!
What?
They're wolves! They're castle!
Why are you talking like that?
I don't know! I don't know. I don't know. I thought you wanted me to.
Well, I don't.
Have it your way. I'm easy.
Your lady, oh, dee dee. 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 Your lady, oh, lady. Oh, your lady, oh, lady. Oh, your lady, oh, dee dee. All in the dee. Your lady, oh, dee dee. Your lady, oh, dee dee. Your lady, dee. Your lady, dee. Your lady, oh, dee dee. Your lady, oh, 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 lady, oh,
lady, oh, lady, oh,
and that, of course, was Roll, Roll, Roll in the Hay from Young Frankenstein, the Mel Brooks musical from the movie Young Frankenstein of the same name. On the line with us here, hopefully, we have Andrea. Hello, Andrea.
Hi.
Hey, what's cooking?
Well, I was on my way home, yesterday afternoon, and I stopped at 7-Eleven on Ocean Street right there, and I met this young 22-year-old woman, and it seems that some guy took advantage of her, and he brought her to Santa Cruz from Las Vegas. He had her thinking that he was bringing her here, whatever, they had some sort of agreement. They were going to come here, spend a week here, and she didn't know that he was going to bring her here and try to pimp her out. And he attacked her, and he punched her in the face. I took her to Dominican Emergency last night. Thank God her jaw's not broken, but, you know, it's just bruised, the doctor said. But she ran away from him, and when I, you know, when she walked up to me in 7-Eleven store and said, ma'am, could you spare 50 cents? I can call Las Vegas. This woman was just in tears. And so, you know, I'm like, okay. I just brought her over to my house, signaling, sit down, calm down and stuff, and I'm trying to help her out. And she's just, she has two children back in Las Vegas, two boys, a 6-year-old and a 4-year-old. And I just brought her here. I said, you're in a safe place. You can just sleep, rest, you know. We were going to try to get her on the bus today. Somebody stepped forward and said, this guy had stepped forward and said he was going to, like, basically get her the bus ticket, and then he just fell through and didn't make it happen. So I told her, I said, look, I'm going to do what I can. You know, I might not have, you know, right this second, but, you know, I know people in the community are pretty resourceful. And, you know, she's been really traumatized, Robert. I mean, I never seen anybody that upset before. And, I told her, I said, you know, we'll try to see if we can't find somewhere in the community that might help you get a bus ticket to Las Vegas. She really just wants to go back home.
How much is it?
Huh?
How much is a bus ticket?
$79, I think the lady said, at Dominican. Yeah, so I just wanted to see if maybe I could do something to, like, maybe somehow get donations from people. If anybody out there would donate to a cause, you know, I'd be more than happy to.
Well, regular listeners, you know, have heard you talk on the air before. I can't vouch for, you know, her or you any other way in terms of that. But if you want, you certainly can give your phone number. People can call you directly, you know.
Yeah, my number's 458-2427 if anybody wants to help, you know.
458-2427, and of course we're talking with Andrea.
Yeah.
Is she isn't a vet, I take it.
No, she's only 22 years old. She's really young.
And she has two children.
Yeah, she has a 6-year-old and a 4-year-old. Yeah, two boys.
Yeah.
And
well, let's see what happens if people want to give you a call. They can, 458-2427.
She wants to say something here.
Oh, sure. Go ahead.
Hello. Yes. Hi.
Hi. What's your name?
My name is Tamilia, and I'm from Las Vegas, and I came out here, you know, I didn't know what the hell I was doing. I have, like, a disorder, and sometimes I can't, like, I make bad decisions, and I made a bad decision, and I brought my ass out here.
Mm-hmm.
Excuse me if I can't say that, but.
No, that's fine.
I came out here with a guy, and, you know, I thought he was my friend, and he turned around and tried to do something that I didn't want to do, and so I left him, and I don't have any family out here. I don't know where I'm going in this town. Thankfully, there was a 7-Eleven across the street that I could go to. And I ran into her, and so far she's been really nice to me, and I just been getting up, you know, I get upset, and I just want to go home, you know, and I just can't be sitting here begging her for that. She can't help me, but if there's anybody out there who could just give me a dollar, because I was going to consider going out on the street and asking 79 people for a dollar, I just want to go home.
I hear you.
I made a mistake, you know, I saw an opportunity to come to California, because I've never been since I was grown. And I came, and here I am, and I don't even know how I'm going to get back. I came with the clothes on my back, you know.
Do you have any friends in Las Vegas?
I have lots of friends.
Do you know their phone numbers? They might be able to, you know, advance you the money, or?
You know. I can't depend on nobody out there.
Really?
Heck, and like I said, if it takes going out there begging every fight for a dollar every couple of miles, I'll do it. I didn't even know Andre was going to do this for me.
Yeah. Okay, again, give me your name one more time.
Amelia. Samelia.
How do you spell it?
S-A-M-I-L-L-I-A.
Huh. It's a rare name. I've never heard of it before.
Thank you.
Sure. Thank you. Well, so again, if people want to reach you, Samelia, at 458-2427, I hope I got your name right there. I'm still a little bit tangled-tongued here.
Right.
Again, 458-2427 is Andrea's number. In the meantime, you got treated at the hospital?
Yes, I did. And thank God that, you know, it's not broken, because how can someone, you know, have to deal with a jaw being broken in front of their kids? And like I said, me and the school, we had an understanding. I didn't know he was going to turn into this person after we got here. And he did. And he betrayed a trust that I don't usually even have with anyone.
I hear you. That sounds like, you know, Pimp City. You know, what can I say? As if I knew.
Right. I didn't know that there were, I knew that there were monsters out there like that, but I didn't think it ever happened to me, so.
Well, I would say, you know, who knows? You might get some call-ins from people. In the meantime, try to rest up. I'm not sure how long Andrea can afford to keep you there, but sounds like she's sympathetic and concerned, and, you know, you should certainly get some rest. This is the kind of thing you need to, you know, give yourself time to recuperate a little bit, and it sounds like Andrea's not going to be doing what this guy did. I think she's a different kind of person, so.
Yeah, I know that.
Anyway, I will pass on the word and, you know, keep us informed as to what's happening if you feel like it. And I think Andrea probably will let us know what's happening. Again, the number to call if you want to help in the situation, for which, again, I've got no firsthand information. I've just heard these accounts a moment ago from these two women. It's 458-2427. Anything else you want to say?
No, she just handed me the phone, Robert. Yes, I told her. She was a little, like, upset earlier, but I told her, I said, look, just relax. You know, you're with me. You're in a warm, safe place. You know, I told her, too. I said she was worried that, you know, here she's stranded here, and, you know, he took her for, you know, $450, and I'm dealing with some shit myself. I got robbed myself and whatever. That's a separate issue. But I told her, I said, look, you know, you're in a warm, safe place tonight, you know. I don't mind you being here, you know. You're kind of helping me out, too. That's not a problem. I don't have a problem with that, you know. It's cool. And I just want to try to do what I can to help, and, you know. So, yeah, that's kind of what's going on. So
okay.
I just want to put the word out. Thank you, Robert. I really appreciate it.
Sure, and you have, and who knows, maybe somebody will call you at 458-2427.
Yeah, all right. Thanks, Robert. Love
all
you.
Right.
Bye.
Take care, Andrea. Bye-bye. So, listeners, that's an option. You've got to make your own choices as to what's going on here. I don't know. I just know that, you know, don't usually get fraudulent schemes on the radio. So I don't think, you know, it sounds like this could well be a sincere appeal, and I would encourage people to at least look into it if they find themselves interested. Again, the phone number to call to help this woman and to call Andrea, who's looking after her at the moment, is 458-2427. The call-in number here, in case you want to talk about any of the issues that we're raising, mostly issues of poverty, homelessness, civil rights in Santa Cruz, and in many cases either police misconduct or abusive police enforcement of institutional legal misconduct by our city council and associated agencies. The number to call for the in-studio line is 427-3772, hoping to hear soon from John Williams, but John may have eluded us again. We'll have to see if that actually comes about. I'm going to play for you now some interviews from the Cop Watch Tuesday that we had on the Mall. We talk about this, I talk about it a little bit on IndieBay.org, Santa Cruz Indie Media, which is a website I often write on, and you can go there to post your own stories. Sometimes they censor them. Usually they don't. And there's going to be some other news websites I'm going to be recommending in the future. If they work out, I've already been invited to write for one called the Courant Times, and I may be doing a weekly column for the Courant Times. I'm kind of trying to pull that together. That's www.thecouranttimes, C-O-U-R-A-N-T, T-I-M-E-S. I think it's either The Courant Times or courantimes.com. Let me double check what the website is here so I don't mislead anyone. Let's see here. It's courantimes.com, I guess. C-O-U-R-A-N-T-T-I-M-E-S, all one word, all small letters, courantimes.com. And Indie Bay, Santa Cruz Indie Media, just Google for Santa Cruz Indie Media or go to indiebay.org/Santa Cruz. And Cop Watch is apparently going to become a regular feature of Santa Cruz, or at least it's going to happen again next Tuesday. The Huff Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom meeting voted yesterday to have another Cop Watch next Tuesday, 1 o'clock. Same place in front of Borders. Keep an eye on things downtown. Encourage people to volunteer. Discourage police misconduct on Pacific Avenue. Particularly important because I've got the heads up from a council member that there is a whole series of downtown ordinance changes. Sounds like for the worse being proposed, though this person thought they were probably for the better. Why the council member told me, it's not entirely clear, but maybe that's just a matter of public spirit, letting the community know what's happening. I tried to get more information from our city attorney, John Barasoni, and got stonewalled. He said, I don't have to talk about this because the city council didn't direct me to. Same thing, apparently, that Sheila Coonerty was told. She is on the downtown commission when she asked for stats from Officer Zach Friend, the police department PR man, when asked about where's the crime wave in the parking lots that requires criminalizing all public assemblies there. His answer was the same as Attorney John Barasoni's. I don't have to tell you unless the city council tells me to. So I'm still trying to get information on what seemed to be an expansion of the Forbidden Zones downtown. This is the fragmentary information I got. Also, the designation of new Forbidden Zones, where you'll not be allowed to sit peacefully, spare change, or perform with a display device. And finally, a new ordinance that would require or would allow misdemeanor arrests for people who ignore infraction tickets. This is an interesting approach. I think they abandoned this at some point because they found that these harassment tickets that police were giving to get rid of people or to discourage them from coming downtown or to move them on, or as the police would say, to correct their behavior, were actually causing people to stay for longer periods of time downtown because they had to stay for their court dates and they didn't want to leave, or else they were ignoring the tickets, saying how ridiculous they were and how angry they were that they were getting hassled for sitting 13 feet from a building or 49 feet from a change-making machine or on the cement lip of one of those 2-inch-high ridges of square cement ridges that go around the trees downtown that aren't really made to sit on per se, but people often do for lack of any other seating space because benches have been removed in great numbers. There are only less than half the number of benches that were supposed to be on the mall according to the Vision Santa Cruz downtown plan after the earthquake. So this is coming up, and keeping an eye on the police is particularly important. Here's some interviews and some discussion from the last Cop Watch 2 days ago.
January 13th, 2009, talking with
Jesse Whitman
and
Alina Hobbs.
And you two just signed the petition to fire and prosecute bad cops. How could you do such a thing?
How could I prosecute? Well, by helping with the petition, by, you know, helping and volunteering and doing what I can for the cause, making sure that everything, you know, of course, a cause with no power behind it doesn't do anything, but if you get people behind you, enough people behind you, it'll, you know, definitely change something. You go, that's what it takes.
You told me you were homeless at one time and maybe homeless again. Does this motivate you to some extent to be concerned about police behavior downtown?
Well, yeah. You know, I was homeless and I had once got kind of harassed. I mean, I looked, I guess, a bit like a suspect, and I got stopped and kind of shaken down. They a little bit kind of, they a little bit kind of ignored my rights at that point. But once they kind of figured out that I wasn't that guy, since I refused to show ID or anything like that, and they had somebody come to ID me, and then, oh, no, he's not that guy who stole it. You know, they just kind of walked away. They didn't even say sorry or anything like that.
Interrupting the story by Jesse Whitman. The point is well taken. You don't have to present ID to a police officer if he or she asks. You don't even have to say if you have ID on you. In fact, even if you're arrested, you don't have to present ID, but they will hold you until they're satisfied, you know, that they know who you are, if they're actually pressing a criminal charge against you. If they're not, they can detain you without arresting you, let's say for identification purposes. But apparently this was a man who knew his rights and the right not to be forced to show identification. And it's really important, I think, that people assert this right and not simply go along with the police state procedures. Because if you want to avoid a police state, you don't cooperate with the procedures that are part and parcel and integral to a police state. You're innocent until proven guilty on the streets. But to the police officers, perhaps of necessity because of the profession they've chosen, you're a suspect until proven innocent. You know, in some cases they may have, you know, reasonable suspicion, but in many cases they don't. But they're simply agents of another class, merchants, conservative residents, bureaucratic staff of the city council, well-dressed visitors from out of town, or just part of the mentality of the police department itself, which dictates that a certain class of people is to be shown less respect and less rights than another class. And that's something that we fight and should never stop fighting every day we live.
It just happened.
Oh, this was like 2 years ago, two, 3 years ago.
Santa Cruz Police Department?
Yeah.
Pacific Avenue or something?
Yeah, right in front of, what was that? Right in front of the Metro.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And do you know the officers involved?
No.
Probably don't remember after 2 years or more.
Yeah, I don't remember after 2-3 years. I just thought that was very uncool, like having my rights kind of, you know, violated. I understand that they were trying to do their job, but, you know, I also have my own rights as well, and, you know, there's different ways that they could have went about that, and I was very unhappy about
it. Any incidents since then that you either seen or experienced?
No.
So things have been pretty cool for 2 years.
No, yeah.
Maybe they've changed.
Haven't been in town, so.
You just got back into town.
Yeah.
Now we've been in Nevada the rest of the time.
I see. Well, keep your eyes open and let us know. And did you leave a phone number on your?
Yeah, I did.
So do you want us to call you to do the next cop watch?
Yeah, I'd like to. I'd definitely like to.
And what about you, woman?
Oh, for sure. Yeah, I'd stand right behind it.
Okay.
Yeah. Anything? It's all about being the change you want to see in the world.
And what do you think? Any experiences with police you wish to confide at this point?
Or? Oh, many.
Oh, yeah.
Many.
In Santa Cruz?
Yeah, for sure, in Santa Cruz.
Tell me.
Just many times where I was homeless and pregnant and was harassed for sitting down and trying to get some help with money so that I can, you know, get to the bus so I can get to the hospital or food so I can...
Admit it, it was for meth use, wasn't it? Come on, tell me the truth.
Yes.
No, it wasn't.
Of course.
You were just hooking on the avenue, weren't you?
Yeah.
You were planning to throw rocks through the bookstore window, weren't you?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Well, at least she fesses up. So, actually, how long were you on the streets? How long ago was this?
That was about, started 4 years ago, 4 or 5 years ago. And
no, 4 years ago, until 3 years ago.
Yeah, and we've been housed for a while now, so.
Do you remember those times?
Yeah. It's definitely unfair for the homeless.
It happened in Santa Cruz?
Yes.
As they say, not in Mandalay or in Monterey or anything
else. Yeah, so it's unfair being...
You should talk about being tased and dry tased and, like, beaten.
Did you get tased?
Oh, yeah.
Tell me about that.
I was getting arrested for camping out up in De La Viega. My camp was clean. I wasn't bothering anybody.
Alone or in company?
In company with my husband.
Oh, ho. Yeah. He was the suspect. The perp. Probably not the perp.
Yeah, and the ranger was just being a total...
Was this Chief Ranger John Wallace, perhaps?
Yes, it was.
You remember John Wallace? See, now, he is memorable in many ways.
Yes, very memorable. He was a complete...
What happened? Give me a blow-by-blow.
He, you know, started running my name, telling me that I'm doing illegal things, such as camping out on private property, quote-unquote, but it really wasn't. And I, you know, stated my rights and stuff and didn't give him the right name, which I probably should have, but, you know, we started running.
You know.
We started running because it was, you know, he was going to, I don't know. We were both scared. It was the first time getting harassed for camping out.
Just so you're aware.
Oh, well, what would a cop watch be without a cop? Oh, yeah, the police have arrived, and they were double parked on the street, blocking traffic. But that's another story. Go ahead.
And basically, he called the cops, and I was dry tased on the spot for defending myself from a retired cop who was trying to stop me.
Yeah.
So.
You don't name the retired cop, by any chance?
I don't. It was a lesbian woman.
What does dry tase mean?
They take the needles off the taser.
They actually straight put it on your skin.
Yeah. And it burnt. Yeah. You know.
And were you doing that? Was she doing this because you were beating her up, resisting her, and threatening to seize her weapon?
Somewhat. I was resisting her. She came up to me and started holding my hands behind my back. She wasn't in uniform. I thought that she was just some
civilian
who was.
Didn't announce who she was?
No, not at all. And I did resist her, and I got dry tased because of it, which was.
And were you also taken into custody?
I was.
Yes. How long were you held for?
A couple weeks.
A couple weeks?
Yeah.
And this is because they picked you up on your heroin and child molesting charges?
Yeah, I guess. No, just camping.
You were held for a couple weeks for camping.
Yeah, and resisting arrest.
And is that because you couldn't make a bail that they put down on you?
Yes.
And this is your experience at the Santa Cruz County Jail.
Yeah.
You were pregnant at the time, too. You were pregnant when they...
Yeah, I was pregnant.
How do you spell your last name?
H-O-B-B-S.
And that was the name under which you actually finally were discovered. Were you charged with false information?
No. No, just camping and resisting arrest.
You mind if I play this on the radio where the police might hear this?
No, not at all. Not at all.
I mean, I think the statute of limitations may or may not have expired on that particular charge, and it would be kind of weird for them to try to get you on this. And but anyway, I suppose there's an off chance of something might happen. But how long, when you were finally released, how did that come about?
I'm sorry, rephrase the question.
In other words, when did you finally get out of jail and why?
Just they didn't have anything to go on by.
They dropped the charges?
Yeah, they dropped the charges.
You didn't plead guilty to any charges?
No, my lawyer was really good. Thank you, Maya, by the way.
What was her full name?
Maya Angelou.
Okay. I thought it was Maya Norberg.
No, Angelou.
Angelou?
Yeah.
Angelou, Maya Angelou is the writer. Are you sure it's not, you're confusing the writer with the lawyer?
I'm sorry. Yeah, it was Norberg.
Maybe she was both a writer and a lawyer.
Norberg.
I knew
yeah.
It was Norberg.
Yeah. Okay, Maya, thank you. So.
And it wasn't jail, it was juvie. You were a juvenile. You were a delinquent juvenile at the time.
How old were you?
Six. How old was
14.
I?
So you're guilty of statutory rape. We're taking you into custody right now. Boy, all these crimes are coming out. Thank God I'm down here on the streets.
Well, yeah. No, we're married now, happily married.
Yeah.
Interesting. I wonder if they would ever try to prosecute someone for statutory rape or now. We've now been married for 2 years. I guess we'll find out, won't we? So you were a minor and you were tased.
Yeah, I was.
Pregnant.
Yeah, I think that's actually probably
did it
why.
Affect your pregnancy? How did you do?
Well, when they went in the hospital and they did an ultrasound on me, it was about an inch away from the uterus that they tased through. It went directly into the.
But it was all for your own good, so you would accept a ticket, you know.
Yeah. Yeah.
Otherwise, your child would have been very disappointed in you.
True. Yeah.
Well, we've been talking with
Alina Hobbs
and
Jesse Woodman.
And thank you both. We expect you to be back on call, and I demand a hug, of course.
Okay.
But, of course, you never accept demands unless you want to. Thank you.
Thanks.
All right, we're talking with...
Yes. My name is Lindsay Mellum.
Lindsay, you've just signed the petition in the hot sun, pausing with your backpack. But you're not homeless, are you?
No, sir, I'm not.
But you were detained.
I was detained, yes, against my will. They thought I wanted to cause harm against myself and to others.
Oh, so you're a psych case. You're a goddamn weirdo.
Yes.
You are a fucked up schizo, eh?
Yeah, they thought I was...
You're off your meds, aren't you?
Yes, yes. They thought I was... I needed my medication. They thought I was either intoxicated or I was on some drugs. They even tested me. I came clean, of course, because I was sober, you know.
Now, where was this?
I was actually right outside of Los Gatos. I was getting off of the light rail.
So this was, you didn't,
the
and are you a local now in Santa Cruz or passing through?
I'm considered a local. I'm transferring to the UCSC, actually, in next year.
Have you abandoned your wild and crazy ways?
I wouldn't say so, no.
Oh, good, good. We can use you at the table.
Yay!
For hot soup, but why we don't want.
Right, more cup. Hot soup has arrived in the middle of this interview. Thank you, Joseph.
The psych ward, EPS, they did not force me to take medication, but they evaluated me, and I was, like, harassed by the people that were inside the crazy loony bin, because there are actually really crazy people there. It was I don't know, it was bad.
Water Street?
No. This was, and they took me to Santa Clara Valley Med in San Jose.
You were picked up near Los Gatos, you
yeah,
said?
Yeah, right outside of Los Gatos. In
how long ago was this?
Like 2-3 months ago, so very fairly recent.
And how have you fared in Santa Cruz?
The Santa Cruz police, I was at the Catalyst like 3 or 4, I don't know, months ago at a concert, and there was a fight broke out, and they were kind of, I don't know, they were kind of ridiculous with the whole thing.
Were you arrested for fighting?
No, I wasn't arrested, but a couple of other gentlemen were, yeah.
Was police behavior appropriate? Was it inappropriate? What's your feeling?
I thought it was a little too forceful, in my opinion. It was a little forceful, but when aren't they, I guess.
And why do you say too forceful? What exact? What kind of force was used?
I don't know. They drew guns. I figured they were just trying to scare people, you know?
Were they confronted with weapons themselves?
No, there were no weapons.
Did this happen on the street or inside the kettle?
Like, right outside.
And but this is at night?
Yeah, it was at nighttime. It was an Andre Nicotina concert.
How many people were involved in the fracas?
Maybe like six people.
How many police were involved?
Like, I don't know, there was at least five cop cars there, and then maybe, and then a couple bicycle cops, probably like maybe like 5 to 10 cops.
And was the gun drawing happening before the mass of police arrived, while they were there? In other words, were there two officers
first,
outnumbered?
Yeah, one officer was there, and then he was with his, like, partner, homie guy, and then another, and then they kind of was like, put your hands up, blah, 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 they called back up.
And how many people were they confronting?
Like, at that point, like 5 or 6.
But you felt it was excessive?
I figured it was excessive. The gentlemen were just, like, having an argument. They weren't, like, no knives or anything were drawn.
Were they physically assaulting each other?
No. They were in each other's face, but there was no pushing. There was no, like, hitting or anything.
Were the perps white, Hispanic, or black?
I believe they're black and Hispanic.
And what about the officers?
I think one or two of them were white, and then one or two of them was like, it was mixed. It was actually a racial. It was pretty much, it was even.
Okay.
One or two more white than anything else, but.
So there's a group in town called PERC, Psychiatric Inmates Rights Collective, which fights forced drugging, forced hospitalization.
Yeah.
How long were you held up in Campbell? Or up in San Jose?
I was held for like 8 hours against my will, but they were trying to hold me for a full 72, but I talked to the evaluator, the shrink guy, and he let me go. And called me.
And here you are at large. He called you a taxi. What else did he call you?
What else did they call me? God, I don't remember, because I was.
Did you get an apology?
Frustrated. No, I didn't. I even went down to the police station and tried to file a report and everything, and there was no. I asked the police, like, you know, is there a police report being filed? And they said yes, yes. And I went back there like 2 days later, and there was no. They didn't.
How many police had took you in?
Oh my God, it was ridiculous. There was like 8 cops had come that day, and just for me. Myself.
Okay, what were the circumstances? Were you, in fact, assaulting passersby?
No, I was just, I had gotten off at the wrong stop, so I was a little frustrated, and I was crying, and I had a black eye because I play water polo, and I get, you know, you get popped in the face. It's an aggressive sport, you know, and so he thought I wanted to, I don't know, he thought I was going to cause harm to myself because I was upset. And I was fine, you know. I was a little teary-eyed, but I was okay.
And so why so many police called?
I really don't know. Bored, nothing to do.
Did you attempt to use him as a water polo target?
No, sir. I did not. They started to arrest. They ripped my backpack off. They started to search me without any question. They just started to search.
You were driving alone in your vehicle?
No. This is right after I got off the train.
Oh, I see.
At off the light rail train thing, and they started to strip me, or not strip me, but like, you know.
At the station?
Yes, right down the street from the station.
And like, were any witnesses to this other than police?
Yeah, all kind. Right in downtown Campbell. So like there was, just like how it is right now, was basically how many witnesses.
Were
probably
any witnesses concerned about how the police acted, or were they standing up for the law enforcement
officials? No, a couple of people passed by were like, let her go, but then nothing of it.
And just, you said there were numerous police?
There were numerous police. There were like 4 or 5 bicycle police, like 3 cop cars, and there was even an undercover cop there. It was fucking ridiculous.
You were giving them an opportunity to show their stuff.
Yeah, I guess so.
All you had to do is whip out your water polo. Actually, I've never seen a game of water polo.
It's a good sport. You should see it.
Maybe they didn't like your class. Only upper-class people play water polo, right?
Yeah, I don't know. I have no idea.
So you're prepared now to do some tabling, do some cop watching.
Yeah.
Leave your phone number and your email, or we'll not be able to contact you. We promise no solicitors will call. Except for Cop Watch wanting you to come out and do some watching.
Oh, yeah.
And make a note at the end of that you were harassed in, Campbell or wherever. Thank you. We've been talking with?
Lindsay Mellon.
Thanks, Lindsay.
And these are interviews that we did on the street with Santa Cruz Cop Watch, which should soon have a website up, either under Cop Watch Santa Cruz, Santa Cruz Cop Watch, or Santa Cop Watch Cruise, something to that effect. We'll figure out something. In the meantime, I encourage you, if you have had problems write about them and post them on indiebay.org/Santa Cruz or CourantTimes.com, I believe it is. Find out again for sure. CourantTimes.com. Or give a call to the Huff line at 423-HUFF. Let us know what happened. I actually got a call from Hale, a Huff member, who he's been homeless in the past. I don't know if he's homeless now, but he reported that another peculiar incident from John Wallace, the chief ranger, happened, I think it was yesterday morning or the morning before, at the Staff of Life restaurant over on, what was it? Not Branson Forte, but I guess Water Street. He, by his account, and he may be calling in to give it himself, but in case he doesn't, I know this may spoil the suspense, but still, he described this for me on the phone, that he was using the bathroom in Staff of Life, and he suddenly heard a pounding on the door. It became more and more insistent, and he finally, you know, thought it might be an emergency. Drew up his pants, no doubt flushed the toilet, came to the door, and who should he find there but his old friend, Ranger John Wallace, Chief Ranger John Wallace. Not content with harassing people in the parks and the Poganip, he's now turned to bathroom duty in the Staff of Life, apparently, according to this account. Now, if Ranger John Wallace wants to dispute this, happy to give him some airtime to talk about it. According to Hale, he was confronted with Ranger John Wallace and the assistant city manager, who insisted that he was seen secreting food into the bathroom to eat privately while on the can. It's really supposedly pilfering and shoplifting, that sort of thing. He, he denied this, that he'd been a long-term customer, left the place, and then came back realizing he wanted to file a complaint, and also that he'd left his the stuff he wanted to purchase, which included food, in a small bag outside the bathroom. Again, this is all his account. He could be lying, he could be exaggerating. This is the account he told me. He wasn't able to find it when he came back some minutes later, so he finally ran into the assistant city manager again, and that manager actually had the bag of food and other items in his hand, and he explained, look, this is what I had with me. I left it outside the bathroom. Maybe there's a sign or something that says you can't bring in such items. They do have those things at other larger chain stores, such signs. And John Wallace again apparently then stepped forward and said, I've looked through the trash in the bathroom, and I found some food wrappers, he said triumphantly. But, of course, this doesn't prove anything with respect to our criminal suspect, Hale. And he said, so? I've never known that Hale was a thief. I don't know that much about him. I've seen him at Huff meetings. But the fact that he would go public with this in such detail makes me suspicious that perhaps Chief Ranger John Wallace was, again, being a bit overzealous. In fact, almost alarmingly so, if this account is true. But judge for yourself. I mean, all you have is this my secondhand account. And I believe, actually, Hale may have left his own account on my machine. If that's the case, I'll try to play it for you later in the show. But first, a little more from Young Frankenstein.
We've been the pride of Romania since 1201. Passed on for generations, father to son. Descended from gypsies, as proud as we can be. Don't risk my curse, it could be worse. Embrace your family tree. Join the family business, learn the family trade. Make yourself a monster, make the world of trade. Join the family business, you must take the family name. Follow in our footsteps and you'll win eternal fame. The Roberts are celebrated for their Roper cheese. The Rothschilds are famous for their wines. Hershey's have their chocolates and Lipton's have their teas. When it comes to making monsters, you can't beat the Frankensteins. Join the family business, rob a brave or two. Stop the shop from closing, it all depends on you. Uphold the family honor, you must toe the family line. Join the family business, join the family business. Join the family business, for your name is Frankenstein. Meet your family! grandfather Mordecai. Join the family business, boy, if you don't want to die.
As you know, predestination from the day of your creation has determined your vocation. That's a fact.
Because you are a Frankenstein,
you have no choice.
You can't decline.
Don't show some spine.
Implanted by the family pact. This is your fate. Become a Frankenstein before it's too late. We know you won't regret it. You should express your willingness. Why not at the S reassess? You're under stress.
Just relax and make a serum. Come up with a brilliant theorem. Take your knife, create a life.
It ain't no fun.
That was Join the Family Business from Young Frankenstein. You're tuned to Free Radio, 101.1 FM, freakradio.org, and that is the web address to go to if you want to be a member of the collective, start your own radio show, or kick down some cash or some equipment to the station. We need it, we can use it, and you'll get the benefit of hearing us. So www.freakradio.org, or give a call to the message line, 427-4523, 427-4523. You can also mail in your checks and shekels to FRSC P.O. Box 7507, Santa Cruz 95061. P.O. Box 7507, Santa Cruz 95061. Any of the numbers you've heard on the air and forgotten after you heard them, you can get again by calling me and leaving me a message, and that's an easier number to remember. Just remember the numbers 423 and then the word HUFF, H-U-F-F, HUFF. It's an acronym for Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom. The organization I'm with, we meet every Wednesday at 9:30 in the morning at the Sub Rosa Cafe, and that's on Spruce and Pacific, and you can check us out. There's also another homeless organization that meets, Human Rights Organization, meets every Saturday. They meet, that's coming up in a couple days, for those of you who want to be involved in any of these projects, say Cop Watch. You can either call the HUFF line, 423-HUFF, or come to a meeting. And Human Rights Organization meets 2 o'clock every Saturday in the afternoon at the Taqueria Vallarta, which is on Pacific Avenue at Cathcart Street. So chew on that one for a bit. And while you're thinking about that, here's a story from, actually it's the Counterpunch website, Palestinians and American Indians. Russell Means breaks the silence on Obama, by Brenda Norell. I'm going to read a bit of this. American Indian activist Russell Means said President-elect Obama was selected by the colonial powers as president to improve the U.S. image globally in the aftermath of George Bush. Further, Means said Obama's appointment showed that he is a Zionist controlled by Israel. Speaking on Red Town Radio today, Means said what is happening now to Palestinians is what happened to American Indians. Every policy the Palestinians are now enduring was practiced on the American Indian, Means said, on the Blog Talk radio show hosted by Brenda Golden, a Muskogee Creek. What the American Indian movement says is that the American Indians are the Palestinians of the United States, and the Palestinians are the American Indians of the Middle East, Means said. Further, he points out that the Zionists who control Israel now control the United States. The power of the U.S. in world politics diminishes every day. Now they have found a House servant by the name of Obama. Means said Obama was selected as a man in charge to take the heat because of the bad cop image that Bush put forth in the world. Now all of a sudden it is, we're so great, we elected a black man to be president. Means added that Obama is a black man who was raised by his white grandmother and has appointed Zionists to key positions, and that the U.S. is headed for a new era of menial jobs. On Indian lands, Means reminds us, the only people who get ahead are those who sell out to the colonial system. Now there is massive and sophisticated propaganda by the Zionists in the U.S. Both countries, he said, are liars. In the U.S., American Indians have been shut out of history, philosophy, and the arts in a total blackout. The United States does not want to be reminded of the smallpox blankets, theft, colonialism, and mistreatment of the American Indian, he said. Means said most Americans do not realize that the financial collapse of this country is only beginning. Americans cannot continue the lifestyles of consumers when there is no production. Low-income jobs and menial jobs are the only ones left. Healthcare in the U.S. reveals how the policies used in experimentations on American Indians become U.S. policies. The U.S. healthcare system is now stringent and calloused with constant refusals of treatment. This has always been the case with Indian health service. Now it is the policy of the HMOs. Family ranchers and family farmers are now in the way of progress, the same way the American Indian was once viewed. Now family farmers and family ranchers are being gutted because they function on massive credit. They are trying to pay back debts, which is not possible with manipulated agriculture prices. The family farmer and family rancher are now going to be extinct. Means points out that the federal government has also taken over and polluted the educational system. Quote, Americans don't even know their own history. Along with this federal control came the passage of English-only laws in many states. However, for indigenous peoples, it is positive to know many languages. If you speak two languages, you are speaking with two brains. That is the way it is to us. That's how we look at life. In the mid-20th century, U.S. schools listened to the communities and local governing boards. However, now the U.S. educational policy has taken away local control and mandated federal guidelines. So now education has become a matter of money. Meanwhile, the real history is silenced. While the United States attempts to portray itself as a peace-loving nation, the fact is that the United States is at war every year. The United States breaks a host of international laws every year, which has been the pattern since 1946. American Indians were aware of what the U.S. was doing because the U.S. had already broken all treaties with American Indians, treaties guaranteed by the U.S. Constitution, he said. About the American Revolution to throw off the British, Means pointed out how his story has been manipulated. There is a great deal of propaganda about why the U.S. broke away from England, but the fact is that George Washington, the largest landowner along with the slave owners, broke with England so that the original treaties of England with American Indians in the West would not have to be honored. The U.S. broke with England to invade the West and take the land. The U.S. was created to break international laws, Means said, adding that it is obvious today that this is the pattern of the U.S. Means said the United States was initiated as an outlaw and renegade nation, and that today its imperial policies mean that Israel is a surrogate of the U.S., receiving aid from the U.S. With a combined U.S. and international aid, Israel receives $12 billion a year for its military and the settlers in the West Bank. Means said 80% of the people in the West Bank are paid to stay there. It is America who pays them to stay there. But even in Israel, where there is a free press, not everyone agrees with Israel waging war on Palestine. He said 20 to 30% of the people in Israel are against the war on Palestine. Like the United States, Israel has been at war every year of its existence. Mean often refers to Israel as the 51st state of warmongers and imperialists. America and Israel are based on lies resulting in the massive deaths in Iraq, Now the U.S. and Israel are focused on Iran because its oil reserves. means that Indian lands have become open-air concentration camps. If you chose to stay on the reservation, you are guaranteed to be poor, unless you are part of the colonial apparatus set up by the Bureau of Indian Affairs, he said. On Indian lands, everyone fights to be a part of the tribal governments because that is where the money is. Everyone fights to be part of the colonial system. The only way you can be part of the colonial system is to obey. Those returning home to Indian lands cannot rock the boat, demand their treaty rights, or their rights guaranteed by the U.S. Constitution. Means said the American Indian movement made people aware that the U.S. Constitution was based upon that of the Iroquois Six Nations. However, the U.S. Constitution only includes one-third of the Great Law of Peace. If all of the Great Law of Peace had been adopted, this country would be much different and much wealthier. However, it was turned into a country of consumers. He said, what you get with a country of consumers is greed. What is going on in Palestine is going on in America. The United States is taking away the homes of the people. Now in the United States, there is communism from the left and right-wing socialism. He said, the problem with socialism is that it is bereft of consensus and spirituality. Means, now 70, said he has experienced the U.S. when it reached its zenith in the world in the 1950s. At that time, America was a productive country. In the years that followed, the ruling elite sold out the unions as the labor movement was razor-thin close to taking over politics in America. The most watershed event was Brown versus Board of Education, the U.S. Supreme Court ruling which desegregated schools. The white male started losing his power. Then in the social revolution that followed, white males lost control of their women and their women's votes and lost control of the workplace. While civil rights was the chosen remedy of most social movements, American Indians remained dedicated to sovereign rights, individual sovereign rights. We are the only ones that held on to the sovereign concept, he said. The other social movements were saying, please, Mr. White Male, let me be equal to you. Mean said that things will be different now. And caller, call back in about 2 or 3 minutes if you can, or we can pick up your call and postpone the reading of this, but I'm going to try to finish it. Things will be different now. Our grandmother, the Mother Earth, is tired of the human race. She is going to eliminate it, and I champion her. Means said matriarchy is what indigenous people are all about. We know that women are the givers of life and men are the takers of life. We have to follow the woman in order to gain balance, he said. In a matriarchal society, there is a balanced society as each celebrates their strengths together. True individual freedom has to be done by consensus. Otherwise, it is mob rule. In the U.S. now, there are fake elections. The people are convinced they are actually electing a president. However, it is the Electoral College that actually selects the U.S. president. The charade is now coming to a close, as the Patriot Act means that Posse Comitatus is dead and buried. Means said that everyone has the responsibility to be free. You are free to be responsible. That is the essence of freedom. Posse Comitatus means it was a law that prohibited the military from acting within the confines of the U.S. as law enforcement agencies. That was removed, I believe, it was either in 2006, 2005, or earlier as part of the a national emergency, you know, with 9/11. Bum, bum, bum. You are free to be responsible. That is the essence of freedom. He said everyone should know their rights. However, they are guaranteed. Otherwise, they are guaranteed slavery. Einstein said the definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over again and expecting a different outcome. That's America. That's the Indian reservation. That's pathetic and an injustice to human beings. He said human beings are doped up with all this ignorance and greed. Red Town radio show host Brenda Golden, an enrolled Muscogee Creek Nation of Oklahoma, grew up in Clearview, Oklahoma. Golden attended Sequoyash Indian School in Salequa before joining the Air Force. Later, she received her bachelor's and master's degrees in business administration from the University of Oklahoma. She has worked in Indian country as an educator, tribal liaison, grant writer, board member, and volunteer since the early 1990s. Golden said she is hosting Red Town Radio on Blog Talk Radio to offer a platform for indigenous issues. And the person who wrote this article, which essentially quotes from Brenda Golden, quoting from Russell Means of the American Indian Movement, is Brenda Norrell is the writer. She's a human rights editor for UN Observer and International Report, and she also runs the Censored website and is a contributor to Red State Rebels, a new book, or actually a book that's been around for about a year at least, and she can be reached at brendanorrell@gmail.com. The whole story can be found on counterpunch.org. Hi, you're on Free Radio. Well, if you want to talk on the air, you have to stay on after I punch you in. Otherwise, you just don't get to be on the radio. Let's get back to some more interviews from the Cop Watch of 2 days ago on the street in front of Borders, which we'll be doing again next Tuesday. If you want to be a part of Cop Watch, do give a call to 423-HUFF. If you want to talk about anything you've heard on the air, or if you want to talk about police misconduct or positive police behavior or related topics, please give a call to us here in the studio at 427-3772.
So it's about 20 to 2 out here in Cop Watch land in front of Borders. Still a nice warm day, or perhaps a little too warm on a winter. Bernard Klitzner is violating the downtown ordinances by sitting on the concrete lip of a planter. And the soup has arrived, being served by Roughhauser Rick C., who's... And here we have a Valerie, Vision Song Valerie, not singing, but showing me a BART police shooting update from the San Francisco Chronicle. BART calls meeting on killing. And in fact, that was already mentioned by one woman who put her name on the petition, even though she was leaving and heading for Portland. She was upset at the murder of Oscar Grant. I know, the DA doesn't call it murder, but we do. Oh, well, there you are. That happened up in Oakland at the BART platform. Yeah. So this is about Cop Watch. We're looking for both for volunteers, for people who've had bad experiences or good experiences. If you've had good times with the police, they'll hear about that too, I guess. We don't want to be prejudiced.
Yeah, yeah.
So let me get a little closer here. What's your name, sir?
Void. I'm Void.
And Void, I think we've spoken before, but anything recent happened to you that you wish to pass on to Free Radio?
Only a couple of days ago, I was camping out in a spot across the bridge by the levee, and the cops woke us up in the morning, and everything was fine. We were getting ready, packing up all our stuff, and they suddenly call my friend Irish here.
Ah, yes.
Up
Irish
to the top.
I got tased and beaten, is that the story? Or?
He wasn't tased, but he got slammed to the ground.
Ah, and smashed into the pavement, as you can see my face.
We'll take a picture. Can you video? Can we video this guy's face? He was the guy that got hit on the levee on, was it Saturday?
Friday morning.
About 6 o'clock.
Yeah, homeboys were there and seen it. But I went up there. Sure, we've been drinking the night before, but you know what? We weren't doing anything wrong.
Hang on, we got to wait till Mr. Noyes passes by. Very good. I wanted to say that though you weren't tased, the tasers were drawn and threatened against the people who were trying to get closer to be a witness to what was happening to you, right?
Yes.
Yes, sir. As I've heard it, my homeboy right over there.
You pointed to Brian over there.
Brian, he had like 5 tasers pointed at him.
So describe for me what you remember of this incident. I mean, you say you were intoxicated, but how intoxicated were you?
I was pretty good, but I was being orderly. I wasn't like breaking any laws, being loud and obnoxious.
Describe what happened as you approached.
So, I walk up there on the levee. Because I guess as it went down, I says, hey, I'll go up and talk to him. And, like...
You've been sleeping, and then you got up to...
Sleeping, woke up.
Call you up, or did you just walk up of your own accord?
No, I guess they called me. They wanted me to go up there, so I walk up there.
How many police officers?
I have this hoodie here in my pockets, because it's 6 in the morning, and it's cold.
There's about 6 officers.
And, like, I went up there, and I take your hands out of your pocket. I'm like, no, dude, my hands are freezing. And then I guess they came up behind me, put their hands on my shoulders, kicked my feet out from under me, and slammed me face first as hard as they could into the pavement, right up on the levee.
You now have bruises, and it's almost a week later. Actually, it's 5 days, 6 days later.
About 5 days later.
And you have scrapes along the right side of your forehead. You have your nose was broken.
Yes, sir.
Did you actually get a hospital report on that?
I went to the hospital, but I don't know if there was much of a report, because 2 of the cops that had beat me down, or I assume they were the ones that beat me down, took me to the hospital because my chin was busted up, and they stitched it up, but it wasn't...
I see a kind of a bandage and some indication of at least a scar or a stitch on that the right side of your chin. You also have on your right eye, looks like a not just a bruise, but a scab that extends down about three quarters of an inch, maybe an inch. And, of course, there's about a similarly long scar on the bridge of your nose, mostly on the right side.
Yes, sir.
And so, again, you were taken down, and then what happened?
I fought like a motherfucker. Like,
you resisted arrest? Are you confessing this to the entire world?
I wouldn't say it was yeah. Like,
are you charged with resisting arrest?
Yes, but I was wrongly accused in the first place and had police brutality at its finest done. And when I've done nothing wrong, you're taking me down. Like, come on. Like, adrenaline kicked in. I went off the hook for like 3 hours. I spoke my mind.
You want this played on free radio? If I were your defense attorney, I would say this might be a section of the tape that you might not want played until after your case was concluded, or you might be candid enough to want to do it now. You should make up your own mind about that. I don't want to second guess you.
Well, I do want the public to know what's going on. This isn't right. And then they tried to justify it, like, oh, you should have listened and took your hands out of your pocket. I was told in the end I started to take my hands out of my pocket, actually. I just said, all right, I'll do it. And at that time was, I guess, when they slammed me to the pavement. So I was actually cooperating in the end. And when they're trying to hold me down, yeah, I fought like a motherfucker for my life.
They bounced you off the squad car first.
Really?
How far away did you see this?
I was... I don't know, maybe 30 feet. 30 feet away down an embankment. And I saw them take him and bounce him off the squad car, then to the pavement.
And do you remember this happening?
Don't remember the squad car, but I remember my face hitting the pavement. Like, I hit so hard. It was like whiplash. My head just bounced back up. Like, it hurt.
Your hands are still all messed up, too.
My hands?
You're showing me your hands. Your right hand still has some injuries around the first and second knuckle there. Looks like a scrape.
Left side.
Left side, I see a scrape on your left. I guess it's down from the little finger toward your wrist. Yeah.
All we need is $32 to get the
FM. All I want to say is to it.
Sergeant, we're in the middle of an interview. Now, come on. Well, you'll have your turn.
Oh, yeah, like you haven't done that to me. Come on.
Oh, come on. Hey, listen, this is Norse business here. Now, I may have to have you arrested for interfering with an interview.
And that was Sergeant Harms, who I was having some sort of off-to-the-side banter with. He wanted to interrupt the interview with some questions of his own about helping. Wouldn't we help this individual? But more of that later.
Indeed.
Well, help him out, officer. You're getting paid how much a month? How much an hour to help this guy out?
Right.
No, yes, you do. Come on, show some compassion, Sergeant Harms. Go ahead.
In the end, I don't actually consider it resisting arrest because I was already in cuffs. And at this point, they're trying to, like, hold me down and keep me from moving, and I'm just in adrenaline mode. Like, I don't really know much. I remember I fought from being held to the ground. I wanted to stand on my feet, I guess. But
what are you charged with?
Resisting arrest. Although I did nothing wrong to be messed with in the first place, because in the end I was even had I left my hands in my pocket.
They will claim you were intoxicated in public, so you could not take care of yourself. And then when they attempted to assist you, or whatever, by taking you to jail, you resisted arrest, and that is a misdemeanor. That's going to be how they will prosecute you if they choose to prosecute you. In my view,
I'm going to sue them. I don't like. They don't have to prosecute me. They can try, but I'm going to sue them.
Now,
there's a great attorney. I don't know who he is, but I'm told if he comes down, I forget the name on him, that he will jump on this case of police brutality and take it to the Supreme Court and win me a couple million in the end, as that's what I could be looking at.
That would be nice. I would hope you do, Irish. I would kind of say it's not likely, but
how much do you think I can get?
Zero, unless you can get an attorney, and also you have to win your case about resisting arrest before a jury. And if you've already confessed to resisting arrest, that will find you guilty, is the problem.
Well, like I says, in the end, it actually wasn't resisting arrest. I'm already arrested and in handcuffs.
Well, if you're in handcuffs, you can still resist arrest by refusing to obey an officer's order. Blah, 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 that sort of thing.
They drag it up. I had my face smashed into the pavement. I'm not in the best of moods.
I understand. But you're supposed to be disciplined. Disciplined, son. When you have your face smashed into the pavement, that's supposed to make you listen. Listen to those police officers.
Cooperate. Yeah, but smash
cool off.
Face into the pavement. It's like, what are you going to do? Anybody has, like, you get your face smashed down, you've done nothing wrong.
I hear you.
I'd say it'd make any man snap. And do,
well,
and
I'm going to give you my card, and you're going to get a chance to call me before this airs on Thursday, because you should probably talk to a lawyer to see whether you want this publicly aired, because it's essentially a confession that you are resisting arrest. Rather than making them prove it, you're saying it happened. So you might want to force them to prove it. What officers were involved, by the way?
The young one that runs around with Winston, an Irish cop, and that's all I know.
Those are the only two, and you don't remember the names of any of them.
Here we go.
I had a ticket for the arresting officer, Bay something. I don't know his name.
Do you remember the names of any of the officers?
I didn't see any badges.
Okay, and were you there yourself, Brian, or not?
Yeah, I was there. I saw the whole thing.
Did you recognize any of the officers?
There's a new little rookie cop that hangs around with Officer Winston. He's kind of about his height, shaved head, white. That's the only one I recognize.
Why do you say that?
Every time he walks through, whether it's him walking through Loudon Nelson, you know, anywhere he is, he's always looks like he's about ready to grab it.
This isn't your paranoid imagination, sir?
No.
When he got his face slammed, me and a couple of my buddies ran up the hill, started running up the hill like, what the fuck, dude?
And he pulled out the taser.
Every one of them pulled their tasers out and pointed them at us, and we stuck our hands up like this, and we were like, dude, we're downhill from here. We're not doing anything. And they all just kept their tasers on us. And then when I came downtown 2 hours later after he got arrested, I had Officer Forbes come up to me and tell me that if I try and interfere with one of my drunk friends getting arrested again, I will be tased and beaten.
Were you trying to interfere?
No, I was just going, like, trying to get them to stop, like, making it notice that, yeah, we saw you just smash his face into the ground for no reason.
How close were you when the tasers were drawn?
About 10 feet away. 10, 15 feet downhill.
And what did the officers tell you they wanted you to do because they had their tasers?
They told us they wanted us all to leave to get out of there, and I was like, no, call your sergeant right now. And I had to call 911 to be able to talk to anybody so we could get a sergeant down there, and they put an officer on the phone, and he told me, basically, just shut up and listen to what the cops are telling you to do.
We're talking with?
Brian.
And?
Void.
And?
Irish.
Thanks, Irish.
No worries.
Thanks, Brian. Thanks, Boyd. Anything else you guys want to add, or is that pretty much it?
Nope.
No, that's it.
Thanks.
And actually, I was on the street that Friday morning and ran into a larger group of people, including, I believe, Brian and Lloyd. I'm not sure which is the proper name, along with some other witnesses to this who've been threatened with tasers for witnessing this takedown of Irish when he refused to take his hands out of his pockets or was slow in doing so by his account. And I'll be playing that at some point. I don't think I've played any of it yet. Possibly on Sunday. I do the show also on Sunday evening. I'm sorry, on Sunday morning from 9:30 to 1 in the afternoon. And so there'll be more tape coming up. I kind of do an informal cop watch when I'm downtown and take street interviews where I find them. But this, again, happened at the Cop Watch table, this particular account that you're hearing, where we were taking particular specific accounts from people. And we'll be doing this again on Tuesday, 1 o'clock, in front of Borders. So if you're interested, give a call to the Huff line, 423-HUFF, or come on down. And you can also give a call to the studio if you have any thoughts, 427-3772. And I'm afraid it's time now for yet another musical break.
Love comes when you least suspect it. Love dances in honor of him. I thought maybe I could direct it, but I never expected a guy like him. He was a bully and a brute. He was as crazy as a coot. Still, I didn't give a hoot. He give us my boyfriend. This every woman he would flirt. He always treated me like dirt, but I was happy to be hurt. He was my boyfriend. I was as pure as a virgin meadow, lying fit fitter in the gloam. Then he turned to me, that charmer, whispered, let's play farmer, and plowed me till the cows came home. He was a monster and a beast. His midnight bangings never ceased. It didn't faze me in the least. He was my boyfriend. I'll never forget the first time I met Victor. It was on the village green at the annual Bock Beer Festival, where every beer cost a bock. I was an innocent young lamb, and he was a dirty old goat. We were made for each other. All of a sudden, he took out his paraphernalia and shouted, let's play croquet! And off to the field we went. He carried his hoops and mallets, and I carried his balls. Oh, what a festival! Fun and games all day long. Archery, badminton, potato sack. Victor won the three-legged race all by himself. It was love at first sight. He was a bond that I gave my heart to, but we never wed even so. If I mention wedlock, he put me in a headlock. When I asked to be his wife, he stabbed me with a kitchen knife. Ah, where did the good times go? If he had an angry fit, I was the first thing that he hit. But I didn't give a shit. He was my boyfriend.
And as you might imagine, that was He Was My Boyfriend from Young Frankenstein. You're tuned to Free Radio, 101.1 FM, freakradio.org. Apparently, we're not going to be getting our phone call from St. Louis or our studio guest, John Williams, who's again spaced us out, or possibly, who knows, maybe he was arrested on campus for having a friend with a sign without a official permit from the designated university authority, as apparently the Good Times reported in November, is now a required procedure up at the University of California and Santa Cruz. Hard to tell what's cooking. It's interesting, you know, I've done a lot of reading about the stories of Oscar Grant, the BART passenger, the African-American youth who was shot dead after he attempted to stop the brutalization or tasering of his, tasering or brutalization of his companions. And he was, you know, then he lay down on his, you know, when requested to do so, put his hands behind his back for handcuffing, and then was shot to death by Johannes, the pronunciation of his last name, Marizoli, I probably have it wrong, the guy who recently decamped to Nevada and then was arrested there finally for murder after more than a week of, goodness gracious, was he trying to pull his taser? Did he just forget that the gun was lethal? Was he seized by a Twinkie irresistible influence? You know, who knows what, but the BART police officer got the kind of treatment that no murderer or killer, to decide what kind of, you know, responsibility he has for it, but it sure as hell looked like a murder on the videotape, gets. And it's sort of a, it's been an interesting situation. But I have here a street sheet, which is the homeless publication from the Coalition on Homelessness in San Francisco, from a March of last year. And the headline here is, and you're not going to read this elsewhere, it didn't get the publicity, there was no videotape. But here's the story. Police kill man panhandling, no charges filed. It all happened so fast that I couldn't really react. I didn't move an inch. I was spread-eagled on my bed and looking down the barrel of a gun, 12 guns actually. I was in a situation where I was so shocked that my mind was frozen. I felt shockwaves after that for a long time. In some ways, I still do. If another police officer came up to me and said, I'd let them know that I see them as someone who violates human rights and breaks the law, not someone who supports them. In October of 2005, 12 armed San Francisco police officers broke through the door of my small SRO, single-room occupancy apartment, and held me at gunpoint on my own bed. In this so-called mistaken identity, the police could mistake my 6'3" slender frame for that of a stout man just clearing 5.5 feet. They could find my trimmed goatee a mirror image of a bushy gray beard. They could see my long black trench coat as a short brown sports coat. On Sunday, January 27th of last year, San Francisco police killed 55-year-old Leon Leonard Michael Cole for panhandling. The San Francisco Chronicle reports, the death of the panhandler was as predictable as the sunrise. Get down on the ground, hands in the air. I said get down. 12 officers blasted through my door like bullet spray and painted the white walls of my room a deep blue-black. They pointed their gun barrels directly at me and cuffed my hands behind my back. I couldn't move. All the motion my body could produce was stolen by my heart as it tried to beat its way free from my chest, from the cuffs, from the guns, from this nightmare. I couldn't understand why this was happening. According to the local news reports, Heather Fong was driving through Russian Hill, an upscale area like most others where people with money like to pretend they can get away from people without money, when she saw Mr. Cole panhandling near Van Ness and Greenwich. She put in a call to field operations and made sure that one of San Francisco's finest was available to clean up the problem, so folks going home to their overpriced condos wouldn't have to deal with the realities of the poverty their city and country have created. San Francisco is very sympathetic to people in condos. People without homes or those with inadequate shelter, though, are targets for the police and are allowed only to be visible in certain areas under certain conditions. You know, everyone that lives in the SROs knows that the police are always coming into our rooms and going through our things. I remember I was getting ready to go to Foods Co. to activate my EBT card. I heard the door click open, and then they just barged in. They said it was because a black man in a coat committed a robbery 3 blocks away. Even though the man was 9 inches shorter than me, was wearing a different color and length jacket, and had a full gray beard to my short black goatee, this was officially not an act of racial profiling. Apparently, many of the officers in the SFPD still think there's a gray area when it comes to their rights to barge into people's homes. The officers that barged into my home just needed a black man in a jacket in the mission. Leonard Cole was just a panhandler that had it coming, according to C.W. Nevius, that writer for the Chronicle that likes to hate on poor and homeless people. Quote, the death of the panhandler was as predictable as the sunrise. That's right, folks. Instead of giving out citations, we should predict police will shoot and kill people for crimes. It's even more predictable if they are crimes of poverty. Nevius asserts, like many homeless people with mental health issues, the panhandler was an explosion waiting to happen. I guess this country is just full of nutbags whose little heads are about to burst. Yeah, I know. Big surprise. According to a recent Harvard study, more than half of all Americans will experience mental illness at some point in their lives. Over the past year, over 1 in 4 people experienced mental illness. I don't think I agree with these figures, but further, according to the San Francisco Chronicle, you're probably about to get capped by your local PD. Don't worry, though. The media will slaughter your name in eulogy, and the Office of Citizen Complaints will conduct an investigation, but, of course, not in Santa Cruz, where the Matthews-Rotkin Council eliminated our Citizens Police Review Board back in 2003. In my case, the OCC, Office of Citizen Complaints, found the officers in violation of various departmental policies within the SFPD general order. This wasn't enough for me, though. The police have been going too far for too long now, and as a young black man living in an SRO and tired of fearing for my safety, I think the city should be held responsible. Without a GED and without a lawyer, I took my case all the way to the U.S. District Court. No one was there to defend Leonard, either. The police approached Cole and tried to give him a citation he probably wouldn't have been able to pay, a citation that would probably have turned into a warrant and landed him in jail, a citation that would have interfered with resources he needed to access to survive, a citation for being poor in a city and a country that is content to pretend that people choose to lose their homes and communities and live on the streets, a citation written by black-booted giants with guns and handcuffs and badges and lawyers and politicians carried by people that have a history of violently and aggressively harassing those struggling in poverty. Leonard Michael Cole, a man struggling through the traumatizing effects of poverty and criminalization, ran for his life. The man tried to escape. The officers from the San Francisco Police Department ran him down. Leonard allegedly pulled out a knife in defense, and there, supposedly trained professionals gunned him down. He died at 6:25 p.m. The Office of Citizen Complaints is conducting an investigation. My case was dismissed on the federal level due to technicalities. No lawyer has offered to help me, but I plan to file an appeal. Leonard's case will likely never see a courtroom. It's crazy that that's accepted in this city and that the Chronicle thinks we should feel sorry for police officers that go killing folks for whom this city has shirked responsibility. It's crazy that the police can get away with anything just because they have a difficult job. It's crazy that so few in this city blink twice when a poor man is shot to death for an infraction necessary to his survival. No wonder we've all got mental health issues. That's a story by Marlon Crump and Lola Bean in the March 2008 issue of Street Sheet, Police Kill Man Panhandling, No Crimes Charged. Actually, the Street Sheet is available online. It's the publication of the Coalition on Homelessness. We don't see much of it down here in Santa Cruz. I have the new issue of Street Spirit, which is a second homeless newspaper that's distributed up there, and a good one. Also on a monthly basis. In fact, I have the new January 2009 Street Spirit, if you'd like. If you want to get a hold of that, just give a call to the Huff line, 423-HUFF. Come to a Huff meeting Wednesday, 9:30 at the Sub Rosa, or just tag me. I'm in my sticker car. You can see a car completely covered with bumper stickers driving through town. There actually are a few of them, but I'm the guy with the big gray beard and the aging paunch. So check me out, and I'll give you a street sheet. If you're a homeless person, street spirit. You can sell street spirit. But if you want to read this story, the thing to do is to go online. And most of the back issues of the street sheet are archived. I'm going to make sure we have the right address to actually find that. And I believe that is at, let's take a look here. The street sheet. This looks like a caller calling in. Let's see what we got here. Nope, that's only one ring. So if you want to be on the air, you got to call more than once. Let's see here. It's a little hard to find. It's a publication of the Coalition on Homelessness. A lot of good articles like the one I just read. And not a very good link to it. If you go to the Huff website, www.huffsantacruz.org, you may be able to find it. Or if you're really interested, give me a call on the Huff line, 423-HUFF, and I will track it down further. It's here. It's just a little hard to reach, and it's worth looking at. And now back to a Cop Watch and some more interviews from the street. Call in if you'd like, 427-3772.
Sergeant Harms, no smiling downtown. You know the rules.
You. Have you ever seen me not smiling?
Occasionally.
Except that when that lady crashed into me on her bike.
I
didn't smile.
I didn't notice you were smiling. You might have been giggling at that point.
Afterward, I was.
Well, the camera is recording your smile, so it better be a good one.
I can't see myself. So.
What?
I can only hope that it's a good smile.
What brings you down to Pacific Avenue today?
Same thing I come down here for every day.
Is there a particular criminal behavior you're investigating, or are you just kind of checking things out?
Yes.
What criminal behavior are we referring to?
whatever comes my way.
Has anything come your way in the last 15 minutes?
Not in the last 15 minutes, no. I've been actually leaning against an ATM.
I'm engaged. Actually, it's not criminal to lean against an ATM.
They don't really have an issue. Panhandling here would be an issue.
Yeah.
Because it's an improper place. See, really what we're down here is trying to enforce some behavioral issues. It's truly not a homeless issue. I mean, the homeless may be affected, maybe even disproportionately to the rest of the society, but,
that's
you know...
That's a candid admission. I admire that, sir.
They got to follow the same rules that the rest of the people do, and as long as they do that, we don't have any problems at all, and it would be a much safer and happier, friendly environment for everybody.
So, of course, we know that the rules were made specifically to drive away homeless people, to give police the opportunity to do that.
It's the rude, aggressive, and hostile behavior of some that
bring... But rude, aggressive, and hostile behavior is not specified by these ordinances, is it?
Yes, it is, actually, in some of the panhandling.
That is the only valid part of the panhandling law. And if that were the only part of the law that were enforced, I would be a big supporter of yours, Sergeant.
Some of the other things, the same thing with the city. You know, in certain locations, it's totally acceptable. Other places, it's not, and there are reasons behind that.
Are the merchants want a homeless-free area, if possible?
That's absolutely not the case. I don't hear that in any of the meetings that I ever go to, that they're trying to rid the town of homelessness. That's absolutely not true. This community, this city, and this downtown area actually provides a lot of service for the homeless. And a lot of the money that's generated down here.
To drive food servers off the avenue. The woman who has this building, as you know, on Thursday, filed complaints against Santa Cruz Revival for singing Revival songs.
Well, here's one of the things I can tell you. A lot of the food that was coming down here, I talked to one of the church groups that was handing out sandwiches and the glass, like Snapple bottles. And just down the street, we had somebody get cracked over the head. It just happens to be two homeless people fighting over whatever they were fighting over. And one of them hit the other one in the head with the bottle. So I asked them not to bring glass bottles down here anymore, and they did that.
Well, that's a reasonable request, but that's not what they got cited for. They got cited for disturbing the peace because the officers involved took a complaint from somebody in the second floor of this building that they didn't like the Revival songs being sung.
I can't even comment on that because I don't know anything about it.
Right. Well, it's part of your force that did this, and of course, unfortunately, it reflects
on 100 officers. I can't possibly know what 100 people are doing.
But it goes to what we're talking about, which has to do with the criminalization laws actually being used to target poor people. Homeless people.
That's absolutely not true. It's designed to target behavioral issues.
So if we looked at, for example, all the behaviors downtown, all the tickets you and the police have given, what percentage of these you think would be 115 Coral Street or transient?
I don't know. It may be disproportionate, but that's because those are the people that just maybe... engaging
or maybe you're targeting them. See, that's
absolutely
the question.
Not true.
Well, perhaps not you personally, Sergeant, because I've seen you attempt to avoid giving a citation. I've seen you attempt, although, to improperly...
And before I praise Sergeant Harms more, let me say that technically the sergeant is correct in the certain sense, although in terms of the issue we're discussing here is what's targeting homeless people are the laws themselves. These laws were created because the people that need to sit down are poor people. The people that need to sit down are those who can't afford the cafes, who don't have indoor lodging, whose public space is the sidewalk. And during the day, the parks, although at night the parks are closed. And they get harassed there as well, even during the day, in many cases. So if you find that the number of people that get hassled for sitting within 14 feet of a building, although not doing anything else wrong, just sitting there, which takes up about 80% of the sidewalk. The forbidden zones involve 80% of the sidewalk. Most sidewalks are maybe 20 feet wide at most. Let's put it this way. Most of the Pacific Avenue sidewalk, actually about half the Pacific Avenue sidewalk, the side that's in the sun and the side that kind of faces south, if that's, I think of that direction is south on the river side of the sidewalk, that's the broad side of the sidewalk. And the other sidewalk, of course, you can't sit down at all because it's not 14 feet wide. Actually, you can. You can sit on the very last... the very last square of the sidewalk, right next to the curb, right next to the cars, right next to the parking meters, and obviously far more hazardous to everybody involved, but showing the stupidity or the lack of thought that went into these laws. The point being, of course, that police officers also are selective in those they choose to harass in terms of drawing their attention to these laws. I think that more recently police officers have made more of an attempt to oppress everybody with these ridiculous laws, although a lot of people don't get oppressed. Middle-class people with their dogs frequently don't get told to take their dogs off the Pacific Avenue, though homeless people almost invariably do, as far as I've seen. But again, as I was saying before, a lot of these laws middle-class people don't have to worry about because they don't do these kinds of behaviors, which are themselves, and this is the point, innocent behaviors. They are not criminal. They are innocent, but they're made criminal so that the merchants have a pretext to drive away people who sit within 14 feet of their stores on the public thoroughfare, not blocking anything, but simply sitting down. And same thing is true with political tabling. You're not allowed to have a political table, within 10 feet of a building, which means it's completely illegal to politically table up and down all business districts except Pacific Avenue, because their sidewalks in those other districts are only 10 feet wide. I guess you can put the table on top of your car. That would be an interesting protest. Anyway, here's more of Sergeant Harms and I exchanging views.
Move someone. I'm referring to Bam Bam on December 30th when you went after him near the Alfrescos. I am. I saw it. It's all on video. We've talked about it before.
And did you notice that his behavior was not welcoming and friendly?
I didn't like his behavior either, but there are a lot of people whose behavior I don't like.
When he disrupts a business, that's a problem, and it wouldn't make any difference if he was homeless or not. That same behavior.
Well, there's such a thing as...
I know you know that there's other issues when I've done the same thing for people who have plenty of
public space.
Wait a minute. He's done exactly the same thing.
He's in a public space, and he's waiting for somebody to show up, and somebody who I like, by the way, because I like Marilyn of Alfrescos, has a problem with him. That can be a problem, but, you know, that might call for mediation rather than assuming one person is engaging in criminal behavior and antagonizing that person so he becomes even more angry, particularly if he's poor. I think that's one of the reasons that people are hostile to police downtown.
Are you trying to say that homeless people are more prone to anger and violence?
No, I'm saying homeless people harassed by police are more prone to anger and violence toward police and those who call them.
That's what I don't understand. It's not harassment. I don't harass anybody down here. I treat everybody exactly the same, regardless of socioeconomic status or
owner. Obviously, there's a real disconnect in terms of how we view what you do downtown, although on many occasions, you know, we have good
connection on what you do down here, too.
Well, that could well be. We need to connect more. Possibly we can go out to a beer or possibly an orange juice, so depending on how we feel about it. We've been talking with Sergeant Harms. Any final words, Sergeant?
I just arranged for somebody down here to receive the treatment that they need and got that medication for them. So
good
how about
for
that?
You, Sergeant Harms. I'm proud of you.
Yes.
You. Keep up the good work. In fact, we may have to commend you and, against my better judgment, file a commendation. Your name of your superior?
It's still Lieutenant Martinez.
Lieutenant Martinez. And I still haven't, I don't know if I ever filed a commendation for your work with the bicyclist at the car. I don't think I did.
You did for the,
I did. I did.
Yeah, for the bicyclist that ran into me?
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, yes, sir. Thank
you. I don't want this to go to your head, Sergeant. If this keeps up, you know, my reputation will be ruined, and yours will probably also be smirched.
Because, as you know, a lot of false accusations and claims get made, so it's good that we get the positive ones as well.
For sure. For sure. No question about it.
And the point here is that when police do act in a positive fashion, it's perfectly okay, and I think, in fact, I often regard it as a responsibility to file a commendation, as I did in the case of a Sergeant Harms when he dealt with a situation where, an intoxicated woman on a bicycle was kind of banging into vehicles and causing problems, and he handled it very professionally without violence and without... There was an arrest made, but that was sort of really, I would have to say, equally the responsibility of the person on the bicycle. And in this situation, apparently Sergeant Harms helped somebody on a bench. I don't have the details of it, so it's going to be hard for me to make a commendation, but I'll mention it on the air that, assuming Sergeant Harms is telling the truth, and I didn't get any updates from anybody else because I was sort of running around doing three things at once at this political table, or at this cop watch table. Sergeant Harms, who originally called out to me to why don't I help this person, and I said, that's your job, Sergeant Harms. He took seriously what I said, and he helped the guy. I think he called a paramedic, or may have called an ambulance, or may have done something. I'm not sure how much time and energy that involved on his part, probably much less than would have an ordinary citizen because of the network of power that he is in the midst of. But that's not to take away from a good decision by Sergeant Harms. Again, I can't really, in total conscience, endorse it because I don't have the information. But any witnesses call in, or if I get more information from Sergeant Harms in the future, I'll pass that on, not just to the radio audience here, but I'll also pass it on to his superior. Here's more from the street.
Thank you, Sergeant. And thank you for helping this individual get the, that's Brian we're talking about, get the medication he required.
244 San Andreas Road.
All right. So we have a larger crew here now, and it's about 2 o'clock. We have Valerie playing some singing, and we have a woman who's signing the petition to fire and prosecute bad cops. What's your name?
Melissa.
And Melissa, why are you signing this petition?
Because cops are assholes.
And you had some specifically bad experiences.
Yeah. They just try to give you shit for anything they can.
Why don't you sign the petition or print the petition and come on over and talk with me. We'll get some more details. We're talking with
Melissa.
And Melissa, how is the soup, by the way?
The soup is delicious. I'm loving the soup.
We'll tell Jumbo Gumbo Joseph about that. I didn't make it.
And indeed, every time we were coming out with Cop Watch, Joe Schultz, who used to run India Joe's restaurant downtown, and actually has been arrested by police for providing food to homeless people on at least one occasion way back in 1989, when they were arresting us repeatedly to try to stop us from distributing free food on the streets. He provides food quite regularly to Cop Watch, and who knows, maybe next Tuesday when we do it again at 1 o'clock in front of Borders, he'll be there with some of his tasty vegan soup. Thank you, Jumbo Gumbo Joe.
Good.
Right.
What has disturbed you, if anything, about police behavior downtown?
Well, they're just really men in suits, and they think that it puts them above everybody else, and they're not polite, and if you say anything back to them, you know, they think that they can give you shit for it. Like, just now when I was across the street with, like, my friend Jaded, and we were, like, have signs up to Spange, mm-hmm. and we were 3 squares apart because we know that's the rule, and he came up and said that we had to be separate. We couldn't be 3 squares apart. And we said,
Sergeant Harms did?
Yeah, Sergeant Harms. And we said, well, we've been told countless times that we can be 3 squares apart, and then he said, oh, that's only if you don't know each other, but if you guys are together, you should be separate on the street.
Would you like to challenge that? We'll be happy to go up to Sergeant Harms and advise him what the real law is, if you'd like.
It's okay. I really don't want to talk to him.
I'll mention it to him, though, because I think it's inappropriate behavior on his part. And we also have a video camera person here. In fact, let me do that right now, because
And besides that, like, I'm sure you already heard about this from a few people, but my friend Irish...
He gave a long report about being thrown down, face down onto the ground.
Yeah, I have pictures of it on my phone and everything, and yeah, it's all bad.
Get those pictures developed or transferred to the internet so they can be... And write up a story and put it on indiebay.org/Santa Cruz.
Okay.
Familiar with that website? If not, I'll give you a... Here's a piece of literature that describes it. I have a question for Sergeant Harms. Do you mind if I interrupt you for a minute? Sergeant Harms, I'm afraid you may have misinformed someone about the laws regarding panhandling. Now, I'm told by this woman here,
yes,
that you told her, even though she was 6 feet away from her companion, that she was in a group of 2. Is this a new rule you've just made up, or do you want to show us the code section that states that?
I didn't make up any rules. I said that that guideline is kind of...
up to you.
No, that's not what I said. I was saying, you know, that's kind of a general guideline. If you're not together, of course, we'd like you to be about 6 feet apart, which is exactly what that says.
Mm-hmm.
I said, but it kind of defeats the purpose when you are together and you just move 6 feet apart and you're still engaged in the same kind of behavior that would be together.
But it's not the purpose we're concerned about. It's the wording of the law, isn't it, Sergeant?
And that's why I went over and just had a discussion with him. I didn't issue any citations or anything.
You were telling her she had to move because she got that impression she did. So you did not have to move, according to the sergeant. Is that correct?
At any time did I tell you to move?
So you have the right to be there. So you're not going to bother her later when we're not around if she happens to sit 3 squares apart from her companion.
I went over and spoke to her while you were here.
Don't you regard that as a form of... But isn't that a form of harassment? I mean, she's not violating a law, yet you're coming over and telling her, in essence, making her feel uncomfortable for what she's doing.
I came over to talk to her, just like I talked to everybody. I talked to everybody.
Why were you talking about what...
Now, there's a couple of things that have to be mentioned to address what Sergeant Harms is doing in this discussion. You'll hear in a moment that the actual wording of the law is that it's illegal. You're guilty of an infraction if you solicit in a group of 2 or more persons. So there's no specific claim that you have to be 6 feet apart or 4 feet apart or 2 feet apart. And in fact, usually a group means you're sitting with 6 inches away from someone. You know, you're standing next to the person. Being 6 feet away from a person, it's kind of hard to imagine you're in the same group, even if you're talking to each other. So the idea that Sergeant Harms went across the street, and then he says he didn't tell them to leave. But the first thing that Melissa said to me, if you'll go back and review this, is I had to he made us move. Actually, that's not the exact quote, but it's close to it. And Harms denies this, claiming he was just engaging in casual conversation. One isn't clear whether he's engaged in a kind of a process of denial within his own mind, or whether he actually believes this, or whether he's kind of being a little bit disingenuous here and not being honest with us. It's hard to be clear. But when a police officer comes over and says something to you that you interpret as telling you to move, says so in the manner of an authority with a gun in his hip in full uniform, I think that if he hadn't made it clear that he wanted her to move and that there might be there, that in essence that was his purpose, not casual conversation, she would have stayed where she was and she wouldn't have complained about it. She would have said, "I had an interesting conversation with Sergeant Harms. He's a good guy. We had an interesting chat about cooking philosophy and the nature of life." But that wasn't what she came up and talked to us about. So Sergeant Harms is attempting to essentially mislead or reinterpret what is going on here. And this is part of the new sort of whitewashing deal that's going on downtown. As I've mentioned before in this program, there seems to be a new series of downtown ordinances that are coming forth. That's what I heard from a city council member yesterday on the telephone, and I've not yet been able to get the specifics because attorney John Barisoni is stonewalling me on these ordinances. But what I have heard, as I said earlier in the program, that there's going to be expanding the forbidden zones, going to be adding new forbidden zones, they're going to be making repeated infractions like sitting in a group of two, which police are interpreting as sitting less than six feet away from each other, an infraction punishable now by an arrest if you do it more than twice. So it's pretty serious stuff when it involves repeated police contacts around this issue of what is fundamentally innocent behavior. And the idea that this is not innocent behavior is an attempt to criminalize a whole class of people who are engaging in essentially a kind of traditional street culture, which, while it may not be likable or particularly pleasant to watch for some, for others it's an economic necessity. And also, frankly, a part of the vibrant life of the streets. And to have people jump up when a police officer comes and essentially suggests that he, be good if they move because he might construe them as being in a group because they're talking to each other and therefore in violation of an absurd law to begin with and therefore subject to a citation, which under the new downtown ordinances, if they're passed, if this is an accurate rendition I got from the council member, would make it a jailing offense up to a year in jail and $1,000 fine. It's a police state kind of stuff. It's police state behavior. It's intimidating, it's chilling, and it ain't good. Hence, Cop Watch. Here's some more from Cop Watch in the last 10 minutes of the show. If anybody wants to call in, you better do so soon, because we got music coming up from 8 to 11 under From the Cream to the Dregs' Uncle Dennis. So that'll be coming up right after my show.
But you were talking to her is the question, though. Weren't you telling her?
I asked. I don't remember what I asked them first. But I asked them where they were from, what they were doing, if they were together.
When I asked you where you were from, you wouldn't tell me whether you lived in Santa Cruz or not. Where are you from, Sergeant?
Well, because of your audience, I'm not really certain that I want people to know that. If they want to find it out, they can find it out. It's not that difficult. But I'm not giving away things like that for free.
And so
that's for my safety.
If you say if you live in Santa Cruz or don't, that's going to threaten your safety. Isn't that a little paranoid, Sergeant?
No, because it happens all the time.
Why would that information? No, I'm not. I'm going to go on and on. Actually, I think I got to let them
personally know an officer that was followed home and shot in their driveway. So I don't feel comfortable giving out
my
personal.
You can do that whether you're in Santa Cruz or outside Santa Cruz.
Absolutely, but I'm not giving the information away for free.
How much do we have to pay you, Sergeant? Too?
you can go through the proper channels and try to find those things out.
The proper channels. I have to work on that. Thank you, sir.
What if that information?
And this is, of course, the kind of mystification, and I'm on a different level than you are, and I'm an elite, and I can ask you questions that you have to answer, but I don't have to answer the same questions. I can act like an authority in your community and yet not be a part of it. All these kinds of bad things are what we're hearing from Sergeant Harms as sort of a natural part of his day-to-day policing. And that's, to me, that's pretty sinister stuff. It's grim stuff. It's bad stuff. And if you add to that the Supreme Court decision that happened, I guess it was yesterday or the day before, which allows the admission of illegal evidence illegally obtained, we get into a situation where, unfortunately, we have what looks like almost a rampant police state happening here now in the United States once it starts trickling down. I'm going to be talking more about that decision on Sunday when I come back. And I'm just about out of time here. So if you want to call in, now's the time to do it. But let's see if I can find a couple more things have happened that are more positive. In Laguna Beach, there has been a lawsuit, I've mentioned it before, against the sleeping ban in Laguna Beach. Just as the sleeping bans have been overturned in San Diego, Los Angeles, or in Richmond, and functionally in Fresno, and not in Palo Alto because they didn't pass a sleeping ban, though they're running around pretending they have a sleeping ban, and are being challenged in Sacramento and now in Laguna Beach. Laguna Beach is, you know, actually has an ACLU down there that wants to assert the rights of homeless people, unlike our own Santa Cruz ACLU. Which is heavy with right-wing non-civil libertarians masquerading as civil libertarians like Mike Rotkin and Ryan Coonerty. Here's an article by Kelly Hart. Some of Laguna Beach's homeless applaud lawsuit. Tickets for sleeping in public irk those who lack regular shelter. From the outside, Laguna Beach seems like a decent place to be homeless. It has nice weather, an abundance of tourists, and a sympathetic community. The city in 2007 formed a task force to address Laguna's steady homeless problem and since has appointed a community outreach officer, set up a special meters to collect money for the homeless, actually for homeless poverty pimps, but we won't go into that, and loaned the Laguna Relief and Resource Center $100,000 to build a shelter. But for some in Laguna's homeless community of approximately 50 people, the ACLU's lawsuit, the American Civil Liberties Union's lawsuit against the city, is the action they've been waiting for. The ACLU, in conjunction with Newport Beach law firm Irell and Manella, sued the city of Laguna Beach, its police department, and members of its city council on December 23rd, contending the city treats its disabled homeless like criminals. Well, we think we have a caller here. Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Hello, Albert.
Yes.
Hey, how you doing? It's Hawk.
Hey, Hawk, what's the word? We got about 3 minutes left in the show. You're on the air.
Well, we had Officer...
Hello?
Seely. We had Officer Seely over by the shelter today. He was on his bike and riding around looking at people and up and down the tracks and shit like that. So, you know, I'm trying to be the cop watch and just, like, see what's going on. It's like, I seen him over there, and he was in, like, in these black duds and stuff like that. You know, like, he had all his gear on, and, like, I don't know, man. It's like, he was looking for something.
Did he find anything?
No. He was just talking to somebody there, you know, and looking around and stuff like that. It looked like he'd just come off the railroad track. He had a bunch of dust on him, and
well, I mean, you know, it's hard to, I mean, you can, it's hard to criticize Officer Seely for running around on a bike. I guess, I mean, you felt it was inappropriate that he was there at all? Is that your thought, or?
Well, the only thing was, you know, is why you got to sit outside a homeless shelter, you know, and sit and question people, you know, when, you know, they're all homeless, and why do you got to be around there unless you got a call? Why you got to stand there and talk to people and stuff like that?
And what
it's ridiculous.
What did you feel? Did you hear what he was talking to people about?
No, he's talking to one certain individual, and it seemed like a closed conversation.
Have you seen, I mean, Officer Seeley in the past, and I think it's still the same, although maybe they don't have this anymore, used to be the homeless resource officer, so-called, although more like some regarded him as the homeless harassment officer. But how frequently is Officer Seeley out there?
That's the first I've seen him on a bike in a long time because it's good weather.
Well, I mean, unless you know, maybe he was trying to help a homeless person. Maybe he was trying to provide them with some resources. I mean, that's ideally what he would do, although frequently, since those resources don't in large part exist, you know, when I hear people saying this, I mean, like, what resources are you talking about? But, you know, next time, and I appreciate your calling in to do some cop watching, get a little closer, see if you can hear what's being said, maybe interview the person afterward that Officer Seeley talked to say, you know, what...
Yeah, but the only thing is here, you know, I think he come down from up here by Delia Vega or whatever it was up there, you know, and down through there, and I think he was doing a fill-in for Wallace, because he's on a bike, and I didn't see Wallace at all today, so that's what's probably going on.
Could well be.
You know, he was all in his black duds and stuff like that, and he was, like, riding around on this mountain bike, and he looked well-equipped, like he was riding on a trail for a long time.
But remember, you're talking to an audience that says, well, police officers are paid to patrol, so maybe he was doing the right thing. He was maybe out there to protect your health and safety, Hawk. How about that?
Yeah, but I don't know.
Maybe he wanted to stop messy campers in the Pogona. Maybe he was part of the Pat Kittle Brigade. I don't know.
Well, anyways, the only thing I disapprove of, them going up and tearing up everybody's shit, you know.
Well, now, if you see any of that, I want to hear about it. If you see any specific instances of that, I need to hear about it.
I'll let you know.
Thank you, Hawk. I got to go.
All right, bye-bye.
No, say hi.
And I think that was Mary in the background saying hi, but I got to say bye, because in the studio is the irascible but ever lovable Uncle Dennis, who has got a growl worth a million, I'll tell you. And he's got a microphone.
Drop your mic.
He's got a microphone that's now a dangling mic, so that's going to be interesting. We'll see if he's able to cope with it. If you want more information on this kind of stuff, you can come back on Sunday, and I'll be back at, 9:30 in the morning, probably earlier. You can call between times if you have reports or if you've got questions. 423-HUFF is the number to call. There's a Human Rights Organization meeting, as I mentioned before, 2 o'clock at Cathcart and Pacific at Taqueria Vallarta on Saturday, and you can come to that. Want to be a part of Cop Watch? Again, call the HUFF line at 423-HUFF, or just watch yourself on the street. Thanks for being with me on this edition of Bathrop Spears Broadsides.
She just patiently smiled.
Justice, and its keepers seem generous and kind. And this is a special message for Robert. Your computer power supply is still here, bud. Come on back. A little bit of Steppenwolf there to fire up the show with. I'm Uncle Dennis. You're listening to Freak Radio at 101.1 FM. We're also, of course, on the wide, weird web at www.freakradio.org. So, anyway, hope it's all working out for you. And let me just let you know that if you are looking for something to do tonight that's a little unusual, there is an open mic at the Sub Rosa Cafe, which is a block south of, I guess that's Lincoln, on Pacific Avenue. They're having an open mic, and the sign-ups were about 40 minutes ago, but I suppose you could still go sign up and it's supposed to start right at 8 o'clock, but you never know with these things. Would anarchist trains run on time? I don't know. I know much less about the Sub Rosa open mic night, but it's every Thursday at 8 o'clock. So check that out right here in Santa Cruz. Something to do tonight if you don't want to listen to my show, but I suppose you might want to listen to my show. You never know. And I do want to remind folks that Free Radio Santa Cruz will be presenting Michael Parenti on Wednesday, February 4th at 7 o'clock at the Loudon Nelson Center. This is a benefit for Free Radio, and you can come on the night, 7 o'clock at the Loudon Nelson Center. Michael Parenti, noted scholar and political analyst, and there will be a $10 to $25 sliding scale donation requested at the door. Also, we have a real special event happening prior to Michael Parenti's talk on Wednesday, February 4th, and that's a dinner with Michael Parenti. With that dinner, you get a signed copy of his latest book, and you also get reserved seating at the talk. And that's $80 for one, $140 for two, and those tickets will be available at the Capitola Book Cafe. So that's a real special thing you can do to benefit Free Radio Santa Cruz. Once again, advanced tickets for the special dinner with Michael Parente, which includes a signed copy of his latest book and reserved seating at the lecture. Like I said, those tickets should be available very soon at the Capitola Book Cafe. Or if you just want to come for the talk, that's a $10 to $25 sliding scale donation requested at the door. So check that out, Wednesday, February 4th, 7 o'clock, Loudoun Nelson Center. And we're going to get right back into some more Steppenwolf.
Smoking lightning.